from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's good. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Good afternoon. Welcome in. This is the WEEI Afternoon Show. I'm Christian Arkin, Andy Hart alongside. How you doing today, Hart?
I'm laboring along here in the afternoon. See what I did there?
Yeah. That's what we're doing. It is a holiday, and some people are taking the day off. Not us. Not us. We don't. It's a new show.
Taking the early day off.
Who would do that? Could you imagine the type of person that would do that? Anyway, we have a big, big show today. Lots to get to here. Gerard Mayo, as you just heard, had a lot to say. He had listed all the captains, left out one pretty important one, i.e. the starting quarterback. But first, how's your weekend going there, Hart? How's it going down there?
It's actually going really well. It's been a nice weekend after our first week together as a show of sorts here in the afternoon. I got the lawn done, got some boating in, had a few beers, watched a little football from the old college gridiron. Pretty damn good first weekend of September.
I got to tell you, I'm probably going to jinx it just by saying this right now. Uh-oh. I am on the hot streak of my life right now gambling on college football. I'm definitely over. I did not miss a single one last night, except for the over, which was the literally the only bet that I missed. I had the over last night on USC and LSU. I had USC winning, which they did, and the only thing I missed the entire weekend was that over. So I guess that's probably the end of the streak right there, but it doesn't matter. It was a fantastic, fantastic Labor Day weekend of sports betting for me, and I just want to rub that in everyone's face here because I never, ever get to. I'm very, very bad at this. I have not had a good year in terms of overall gambling, but now I think it's a new day and a new sports year. I mean, this is it, right? Like, the summer's over. This is Labor Day. The new sports year is about to begin here on Thursday. That's really when it starts. You know, forget the actual year. The new sports year starts when week one of the NFL season kicks off, and that is coming your way here in just a couple of days. So we'll have a lot on that, on the NFL season coming up here. We'll make some predictions. But let's go ahead and start with what we just heard right there, which was Gerard Mayo listing off most of the captains. And then that was Greg Bedard, I believe, who said, hey, you know, if you're not going to have Jacoby Brissett be a cat, whoa, wait a minute. Yeah. Actually, and also Jacoby Brissett, he's a captain too. Thanks for reminding me, Bedard. Glad you're here. Good catch. Everybody delete your stories, delete your tweets. He's a captain too. All the graphics have come out with Jacoby Brissett in them, so I don't believe it was just some sort of last minute, oh God, I got to include him too. He was named a captain. They said there was a vote that was taken, so it sounds like that vote included him being voted in. Any thoughts, reactions there to the captains this year, the C's on the jersey, and Jacoby Brissett being a captain, and then the coach forgetting that?
So, first of all, a little inside radio. When we're planning the show, you know, most shows put together some sort of a grid or a rundown or whatever. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about it. We're like, well, you know, Mayo talks at 12:45, so he's probably going to say something. I think we can now guarantee that every day that Gerard Mayo speaks to the media this fall, we will have something to react to.
Putting a rundown together before he speaks is pretty pointless. You're right about that, yeah.
Or just make sure you say, Mayo conversation goes here, and we make fun of him for saying something stupid or screwing up, because
today it says Mayo quote from today. That's literally what it says in there before we even heard him talk.
And I like Gerard, and I was a believer that Gerard could and maybe still will be a good coach. He continues to step in it every effing time they turn a microphone on in front of him. And is this a huge deal in another place in another time? Like, if it's Tom Brady, nope, no big deal. If it's Drake May in 4 years, no big deal. But when everybody in the world is fixated on how long Jacoby Brissett's going to play, is he a placeholder, seat warmer, Drake May? The players wanted Drake May because they know he won the job. for you to not lead off with, here's our captains, obviously our starting quarterback, Jacoby Brissett, is a captain, great leader, to forget about him. I don't know if this falls under Freudian slip or out of whatever the description you'd use, some cliche description. It's a terrible look for not only Jerod Mayo, but for Jacoby Brissett. It's like, here we go again. They tell me I'm the starting quarterback, but it doesn't feel like I'm really the starting quarterback. He forgot about me at a press conference.
They held a vote. I was voted a captain. And it was like, okay, Brissett's there too. Yeah, he's also one of them. You would think this would be one of those things. And he also mentioned in there, you know, this is something different we're doing now. All the captains are getting a C. It's going to be different from how it used to be. We're going to, you know, let everyone know who the captains are, which I sort of remember with Belichick. Are there other teams that put C's on the jerseys, or are they going to be the first team that does that?
I don't know
other teams that do this.
No. Every team puts the C on the jersey.
Every team has C's on the jerseys except for the Patriots.
It was a league mandate like 10 years ago, and they do the C, and then there's, I think, four gold stars underneath, and as you are a multi-year captain, they fill in the stars, and then when you're like a five-time captain, you become like, the whole thing is in gold. Yeah, there's whole system in place from the National Football League that Bill wanted no part of. I don't know if you heard Jerod Mayo brag a little bit. He was like, I was a captain 7 of 8 years, and I
right.
never got to wear it. Wah. Like, and Bill talked to, he just didn't believe in it. Thanks, Bill. But yeah, they are now keeping up with the times, keeping up with the Joneses, so to speak, and actually putting C's on there that everybody else has been using for more than a decade.
Understandable. I honestly have never noticed it on any other team. I know the Patriots didn't have it, but it's not like it was something I saw on all the other teams and was like, oh, wow, interesting that the Patriots don't do this. I guess I just never noticed it, period. But either way, that's something that they're going to be doing now. It's another thing that they're doing to kind of get away from the old regime. And let's go through it. First of all, Jacoby Brissett, as a captain, I know they took a vote here and everything, but how do you think he will perform as a captain for this team? And also, when you're talking about naming captains, it seems like they're giving this guy the captainship knowing that he's not going to be starting all year. You know, like Breer and Jeff Howe, a bunch of people wrote over the weekend that this team expects that Drake May is going to take over as the starter at some point this year. So you just named the guy a captain who's going to lose his job, conceivably.
Yeah, and that happens. I mean, we all know at all levels, generally the starting quarterback is a captain. It's just kind of, they go hand in hand. Half the time
right.
when the guy maybe doesn't even really deserve it. It's a really, and that's why I think Greg Bedard popped up, was it's a really glaring omission when you have a team that doesn't have a quarterback that's part of its group of captains. But yeah, this happens in a lot of places. When, like, for example, Russell Wilson will be a captain of the Steelers, and I don't know about you, but I think there's at least a 50-50 chance he doesn't start all year. So, you know, you get these places where guys come in, veterans, holdovers, young guys, competitions, things of this nature. I'm trying to think. There was one that really stood out to me in recent years where a guy was a captain, and I'm going to say he only started like one game, two games, and then it might have been Tyrod Taylor. Maybe Tyrod Taylor was a captain in L.A., and then obviously he shortly thereafter was no longer the starting quarterback. So it looks funny sometimes when they're out at midfield for the coin toss, and you're like, well, that's the last you're going to see of him today unless there's a injury situation. But I actually think Jacoby Brissett's probably better suited to be a captain than he is a starting quarterback, if that makes any sense. That makes perfect sense. Yeah. Like, I want him as a captain. I don't really want him as my starting quarterback, but in terms of leadership, the wolf pack and the attitude and the work ethic and the experience and everything that he brings to the table, hell yeah, Jacoby Brissett can be my captain. And then get off the field and let the other guy play quarterback.
Yeah, and sometimes it is just a title, you know? It's really all it is. It's a title. We're giving it to a veteran on the team just to thank him for the years of service or the experience or whatever. And sometimes with a young team, you just make the old guys the captains because it's such a young team. It feels weird giving it to somebody else. Now, the Chicago Bears don't think that. They made Caleb Williams their captain, and he's going to be starting for them. And I think in most cases, you want your starting quarterback to be out there as a captain. The other captains, by the way, along with Jacoby Brissett, the ones that Jerod Mayo remembered to mention were David Andrews, Jabril Peppers, Juwan Bentley, Joe Cardona, and Dietrich Wise, some of the older guys on the team. I mean, I think it's pretty straightforward here what they're doing and why they're doing it. Cardona being a captain, I mean, I think he's the oldest guy on the team. He's one of the few guys like in their 30s on the entire team. Andrews, no-brainer. Jabril Peppers, I feel like, is not a controversial pick. Same with Juwan Bentley. Same with Dietrich Wise. All of these guys are, you know, kind of Belichick captains is how I look at most of them. Like, these are guys that Bill would have probably named captain.
Yeah, most of them are holdovers, and Cardona just kind of picks up. Most teams have a special teams captain forever.
Right.
Here it was Matthew Slater. He's obviously gone. Probably, I guess, Brendan Schooler would have been maybe the other option if you wanted to put him as a special teams captain. The one that kind of doesn't jump out at me. I mean, there's a few things here. So Hunter Henry had been a captain, is no longer a captain. I found that just interesting because, as you said, most of the
right.
guys that have been captains are still captains. The
I forgot about
the
that. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that sort of stood out to me. And despite all his lobbying, Kendrick Bourne is not a captain. His teammates did not vote him captain. He's been talking all offseason about trying to be a captain. Well, he didn't get that. And I love Peppers as a captain. He's another one that... Whew, that's the guy you want as a captain. I feel like he does every old school, hit you hard, pick you up, hit you hard again, talk about it. You know, I don't want to hear about the "you're lucky we asked" comment to Saquon. That was the right thing to say, in my opinion. The truth is never mean, and when you're a captain, sometimes you just got to tell the damn truth, and I think Peppers is the guy to do that.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's going to have to keep telling the truth about this team being ass, because they're still ass, and according to a lot of preseason prognostications, these New England Patriots and these captains and this whole squad top to bottom are being talked about as the worst team in the NFL. And that's not me saying it. I have said things like this before. You certainly have too, Andy. But as these lists come out, as these preseason predictions come out, I saw the Ringer released an NFL trade value column this morning. Not one. There's 89 players. There was not one Patriot on the entire list. There's really, I think, a good chance here that this team could end up being one of the, if not the worst teams in the league. Now, it's been about 30 years since you could say that, not just before Brady and Belichick got here, but even before, way before that. We're talking like 92 and, you know, the Rod Rust year, whatever that was, 1990. Like, that's the type of season that I think people are expecting. That's what people are looking at. And, you know, you can make announcements. You can come out with your captains. You can say all the things that Jerod Mayo had to say today. And he did have more on the quarterbacks, and we'll get to some more comments that he had here. But in general, I think that it's starting to really come into focus as we are now 3 days away from the opening day, from week one kickoff there with the Ravens and the Kansas City Chiefs, Andy. These New England Patriots are on the short list of the worst teams in the league.
Yeah, so they're kind of where they were to end last year. Because I know there was optimism. You know, the Tom Currans of the world were picking double-digit wins, and there were wins everywhere on the schedule. I think a lot of people last year were, and correct me if you feel like I am misremembering, that, you know, most people were right around 500 last year, a couple games below. Like, I think I picked 7 wins, maybe 6 or 7 wins last year. So they underachieved for most people. And then you look at where they are talent-wise and the blow-up, you're right. This is, you're going back 30 years, just like Robert, right? He was talking about he hadn't had a draft pick since Drew Bledsoe, going back that far. Like, everything was kind of going back to those early 90s, and anyone who remembers the early 90s from a Patriots perspective realizes that's not exactly a good thing, although...
It was not a good thing. 1992, they were 2-14. There was another... The Seahawks were also 2-14 that year, so they weren't the worst. They were tied for the worst team. 1990, the Rod Rush year, 1-15. They were all alone at the bottom. That was when they were the worst team in the league.
But
the
last
time
they
were alone as the worst team.
They were laying the foundation for the mid-90s, and it was back, baby. You got back to the Super Bowl. You didn't win it, but you got back to the Super Bowl, back to the playoffs, winning playoff games. So, you know, maybe if this is history and narratives repeating themselves, they are sort of starting that process, digging out of the hole. Maybe they've now bottomed out entering a season, because you're right. I saw another one, the Panthers. Some people think the Panthers are a worse team, and I think that's a very strong argument. Fair debate can be had there, which of those two teams is the worst. But, yeah, the Patriots are bottoming out right now, you hope, because if they haven't bottomed out, then Lord help us all.
Yeah, seriously. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We have open phone lines for you if you're driving up from the Cape or down from the lake, or if you're just spending your Labor Day on the couch and listening to us that way. All of that is fine. We have room for you here if you want to talk Patriots. We also have to get to the Red Sox and the terrible, horrible, no good, very bad weekend for Alex Cora and really the team in general. I think yesterday is the first time in a while that people have really started to wonder what is going on with this manager. And we'll be talking to him tomorrow, I believe, unless we really get out of hand today. I don't think so, but it was an ugly, ugly weekend for the team. baffling decisions from Alex Cora, which we'll talk about. Certainly yesterday, that one is one that I think is going to echo and reverberate for a long time. It's going to be one people look back and point at when they talk about the season if they end up missing the playoffs. I don't even know if those Netflix cameras are still following this team around anymore. If they are, this has turned into a very depressing Netflix special. Let me put it to you that way. But with all the stuff that's happened this year, I think that that's one of those, it's one of those moments, kind of like last year, Hart, you remember when they left that poor kid out there to just get his brains bashed in. Bear Claw, remember, he was out there just getting crushed, and they were still somewhat in range, you know, they were still in reach. People weren't expecting him to do anything, but they were still, it was still a possibility. And I think that right now, you know, the Twins won yesterday. It's not like they would have picked up a game or anything, but in terms of keeping pace with these teams and seeing a guy pitching a no-hitter, perfect game even, through four innings, and then going to the 44-year-old right out of the bullpen and then having him give up that home run. Like, that's one of those things that I don't think is just going to go away. It's going to be one of those things that gets made maybe more of than you should, but it's the day after that game. It's the day after this series. They're about to start up a new one with the Mets, and I think that you're going to have to really do some soul-searching here going into this next series, because that was just brutal. I mean, that was a brutal series in Detroit. They should have won most of those games. The offense has completely disappeared, and Alex Cora just, there's no way to really explain that one away. I'm sorry. Like, that was ridiculous.
Is Christian Arcand having buyer's remorse on the Alex Cora extension?
I don't think I'm the only one. I don't think I'm the only one that's sort of wondering, okay, they gave him the extension. Is this year going to be any different? And no, here comes August, and once again, the team's doing what they do every single year, basically, since 2018 under Cora. And that includes the year in 2021 when they made it to the ALCS. These months of August have been brutal. And that's whether they have Chaim Bloom or Craig Breslow or whoever. And I think that that's really something that people are going to get fed up with if it keeps on happening. And that's not to say I think Cora's done a bad job this year, but when you give somebody an extension like that, aren't you sort of hoping that they're going to bust out of these bad habits, or the team would get out of these habits that they're in? Because this is another year of this. And I'm sorry, but, you know, I was expecting with a big extension and a big commitment to Alex Cora that there would be more of a push here in this month to not have it look like the last few and not have an entire month of September where the games just don't matter. And I feel like we're headed right for that again. And that's upsetting. If you're a Red Sox fan, how's that not upsetting?
No question. It's upsetting. And, you know, I thought anyway, the trade deadline took away the excuse for falling apart in August and September, because whatever you think of what they did, they were relative buyers. We talked about it the other day. A lot of people at the time were grading it like, oh, C+, B-. You kind of checked off some boxes. And in hindsight, you probably should have done more. You didn't do enough. You got two relievers on the IL. The starting pitcher's gone. Like, the whole thing. But at least superficially, it felt like they gave the players reason to believe. Like, they took away the emotion or the reactionary flatness of a clubhouse.
Right.
And yet, the results are kind of panning out similarly. And I continue to wonder at what point they shut Devers down, start making long-term decisions, shut a Houck down, or, you know, start to really fixate on these innings with these starting pitchers. And quite honestly, the final month could be as ugly or uglier than it's been in the past if they start to do some of those things, because you're already trending in a horrifically bad direction. And I was all for Cora. I like Cora, so I'm not going to change now. But the facts are the facts of the way his baseball team has played late in the season in recent years, right? There's a scoreboard. There's a record. There's a wins. There's a losses. And it has not worked for him and for them in recent years. And, you know, that's something he has to answer for. And talk is cheap, right? He can tell me X, Y, and Z. The reality is, sooner or later, Alex Cora needs to lead a Boston Red Sox team in August and September that doesn't fall like a stone in a pond.
Yeah, that'd be nice. And we'll get to what Cora had to say after the game. I think a lot of people found his reasoning for taking out Criswell to be unsatisfactory. I mean, I don't really know there'd be a good reason for it unless he was injured, but there's no indication that that was the case. And we all saw what happened. We all saw the result. Real quick, it's time now for our league leaders and who's circling the drain, presented by Drains by James. Drains by James is Eastern Mass's leader in residential and commercial drain cleaning and pipelining at drainsbyjames.com. At Drains by James, they give a poop about your pipes. We'll have the league leaders hear from Hart in just a minute, but I want to tell you what's circling the drain. Now, you mentioned you did some boating this weekend, Andy. Is that right?
Well, you
I did as well.
Circling? What?
No, I'm doing circling. You're doing league leader. So for my circling the drain, you were doing some boating. I also did some boating this weekend. And I'll tell you what's circling the drain. Tubing. When I was a kid, people used to go out in the boat and they'd take their tube and they'd get towed on the tube and you'd whip the kids around, try and flip them over on the tube. Oh, we also had this thing called the ski bob. You remember the ski bob?
No, what's that?
The ski bob was like it was like a modified banana boat. It was like this little missile that you sat on. Two kids could sit on it, and it was basically like, you know, you're on a tube and you're getting towed behind the boat and you're whipping around and jumping over the wakes and doing all that stuff. And it was just another extension of that. But it was dangerous, you know. I don't think they make them anymore because it was dangerous. And I think that's sort of the point here. This is why the tubing industry is circling the drain to me. If you go out there on the lake now, or out in the ocean, wherever it is, these aren't tubes that people are tubing on. It's not an actual tube. It's basically just an easy chair, and you sit on it, and you're just getting pulled around like you're sitting on the couch. If you want to do that, just sit on the boat. The whole point of the tube is that you're on the tube. There's the possibility of falling off. The guy driving, it's usually your dad or your uncle or your cousin or somebody's driving the thing, trying to whip you around and flip you over so that you fall off the tube and they have to circle around and go get you. On these new tubes, they're not even tubes. They're just inflatable chairs that people are sitting on behind the tube. And I just want to know, first of all, when did I become this boomer who's like annoyed by everything that's happening with kids these days? And second of all, when did tubing become this like thing that has to be protected by everyone? You're outside, you're getting towed by a boat, you're getting whipped around behind the boat, and the whole point of it is the whole fun part of it is that you might fall off. With these new tubes, it's impossible to fall off, and I think that that's really hurting the tubing industry. So that's circling the drain to me. Who is your league leader, Andy?
So my league leaders, and we're going to continue to talk about the Red Sox and why they suck and starting pitching.
Also, do you have a comment on the tubing industry?
Well, I do have a comment on the tubing industry. I love tubing. We do. I agree with you. We have sort of the traditional old school tube, not even the one that is a circular one. It's almost like a wedge, and you can whip the you know what out of the kids.
Yes,
you know,
those are
as
great.
As the driver of the boat, I always do the, did he pop up? And is he moving? Because it's that fine line where you're trying to whip the kid as hard as possible. You don't actually want to see anybody get hurt. And we still do that, and it's a hell of a lot of fun. But you're right. There has definitely been a proliferation of the, I think they're called like Big Mabel or something, these big like easy chair sit back.
I have no time for that, yeah.
Yeah, it's awful. But I will say, if you look on the websites, and I've always told my kids, if I ever win the lottery and just have endless amounts of money to buy stupid crap online, we are ordering every tube that is made, because there are still a lot of fun ones out there where they look like you could get the absolute crap kicked out of you if you do it the right way with the right driver. So,
all right, let's make tubing great again, all right? Let's make that happen.
That's part of your MAGA Arcand platform. I like it.
Yes, it is.
So league leaders, we're talking about pitching. We're talking about Cooper Criswell. And we're bitching about him getting pulled. Perfect game. We're talking about Brian Bayo tonight. Maybe he'll bounce back continue with the great game he had. But it's hard not to continue to have one eye south in Atlanta, where Chris Sale is well on his way to potentially winning the Cy Young Award for the Braves. He is second in Major League Baseball in wins. He is second in Major League Baseball. That's 15, by the way. 16 for Skubal. Skubal leads the league in ERA, but 2.51 to just 2.58 for Chris Sale. And Chris Sale is third in strikeouts with 197. I listened to the Alex Cora interview on the ride home the other night when we left the studio on Friday, and he was talking about the trade, and he's like, oh, you know, we just two teams going different directions, and it's like, wait, you traded Chris Sale for Vaughn Grissom, and he doesn't even get called up when guys get hurt. He's still in Worcester, and you bring up Sogard. I know it didn't work here, and people grew to hate Chris Sale, but it's so hard to watch him dominating yet again in Atlanta.
It really is. And the worst part of it is, you know, if he did stay here, he'd be hurt again, and he wouldn't be doing this. Like, you just know that for sure. Like, that's
I know, but
guarantee.
I don't want to know that. Can you imagine if he put those numbers up for the Boston Red Sox, they're in the playoffs right now, correct?
Absolutely they are.
So that's the difference in the season, is you traded him away for a guy that is in the minor leagues and may never do anything for you.
Chris Sale, by the way, minus 550 on FanDuel right now for that National League Cy Young. Zach Wheeler at plus 300, and then Logan Webb, 7,000. Skeens is 100,000, like it's, 10,000, and everybody else is below that. So, yeah, there you go. Basically going to be your Cy Young winner, and there's not much anybody can do about it. So there you go. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We see the phone calls lining up already here on this Labor Day. We'll get to as many of them as we can. But first, here's Zach Cohen. He'll tell you what's trending.
Now, Here's what's trending on WEEI.
Trending now, brought to you by the Massachusetts Health Connector. Red Sox fell to the Tigers 4-1 the final yesterday from Detroit. Sox dropped 2 out of 3 there. Cooper Criswell got the start, going 4 perfect innings before being pulled in favor of Rich Hill, who got stuck with the loss. Sox now sit 4.5 games back of the final wild card spot after the Royals fell to the Astros 7-2 yesterday and the Twins defeated the Blue Jays 4-3. Next up for the Red Sox, a trip to Queens to take on the New York Mets in a 3-game set that kicks off tonight when Brian Baio takes on Luis Severino. Our coverage of that game starts at 6:10 with Cooper Boardman on the MassMutual pregame show. Then Will Fleming and Lou Merlone will have the call of the game on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's, perfecting the art of fresh. First pitch set for 7:10. College football kickoff weekend wraps up tonight when the Boston College Eagles head down to Tallahassee, Florida to take on the 10th-ranked Seminoles. Kickoff at 7:30 p.m. You can hear our coverage of that game on WEEI 850 a.m. Trending now, brought to you by the Massachusetts Health Connector. For every double the Red Sox hit, we'll donate $50 to the American Diabetes Association, brought to you in part by the Massachusetts Health Connector. If you need health insurance, go to mahealthconnector.org and find the right plan for you and your family. My name is Zach Coe. That's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com. More of the WEEI Afternoon Show coming up after this.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
If your day sounds like...
we need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them... Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, that was Jerod Mayo. Earlier today, he spoke to the media at about 12:45 before practice, which started, I think, at 2 o'clock. And I'm glad someone asked him that question. I don't know exactly who it was that asked that question, but I'm glad whoever it was did ask that, because I was wondering that myself. What is it going to take for Drake May between now and his first start? What are you going to need to see? What is it that is not complete yet with him? That's really the question. Because they've made a whole point about saying that Jacoby Brissett, Andy, is the one that they think gives them a better chance to win. And I know none of us really believe that, but that's the stance that they're taking. And if that's the stance that they're taking, then that implies, nay, insists, that Drake May isn't ready yet. And I think that there's an argument that could be made about Drake May and how he's still kind of raw, and how, despite, you know, looking good against some of these backups and third stringers that we've seen him against in these preseason games, there's still a lot of work that needs to be done here. But they're not really even saying that either. Like, he didn't give you a definitive thing. He wasn't like, well, reading the defense isn't there yet, or, you know, his footwork still has some things that we need to work on, the pocket presence, accuracy, whatever. I mean, it's just that none of that was there. So if they don't believe that May is ready, and they're not willing to specifically tell us what they're waiting for him to improve on, then it sort of seems like, I don't know, I think it's bad faith argument from the Patriots here doing their reasoning for starting him. But if that's the stance, then we have to explore it and we have to take it at face value. Now, I don't think you believe that this is the case, right? You don't think that it's because Drake May is unprepared to set foot in the NFL. But if that's the argument that they're making, how can they justify it? Like, what have you seen, I guess, Andy, that makes you sort of look at it and go, you know, he may be better than this at this than Jacoby Brissett, but that doesn't necessarily mean he's ready to go out there and be a star NFL quarterback.
And that's a great point that you just, I don't know if you made it intentionally or stumbled into. I'm going to respect you and say it was intentional.
Well, which is it? I'll tell you.
Just because he's better than Jacoby Brissett.
I did that on purpose, yeah.
Doesn't really mean he's ready to play in the NFL. We talked about it the other day. There's probably one place in the NFL where Jacoby Brissett is even competing for a starting job. That's New England. Everywhere else, he's not. So he is not the measuring stick, because nobody wants Drake May to be the 32nd best quarterback. They want him to be a top 10 quarterback. Mm-hmm. And they want him to go out there and not suck less than Brissett, but be good, right? Like, be a positive. Not be, what was Tom Curran's word? Be Jacoby Brissett a detriment to win, impediment to winning.
Yes.
Well, we don't want to say, well, Drake is less of an impediment to winning. No, no. You want to say, Drake gives us a chance to win. Not that he's less bad, but that he's more good, right? And I know I'm probably, this is sort of some semantics and parsing words, but just because he's better than Brissett doesn't mean he's good enough to where you want him to play. I think that argument can be made. Now, I would also say, if I'm Jerod Mayo, I've had about enough of these GD questions about the competition and what does one guy need. Now it's regular season. I know technically it kind of doesn't start today. This is a weird extra day, as he noted in his press conference, but it's the regular season. It's game week. I announced a damn starting quarterback. He's going to start in Cincinnati. No one else is being talked about at the quarterback position. We're getting that guy ready to play because he has a massive challenge to go try to score points against Joe Burrow and make plays against a good Bengals defense led by a good veteran defensive coordinator. And, you know, there'll be another time to talk about Drake and his development. We have quarterbacks coaches. We have other people behind the scenes that he'll be working with. He'll be just like any other player on the team. He'll be trying to develop while also helping the team prepare in any way we ask him. Like, I almost feel like it's a disservice to everybody involved if he keeps answering these questions about Drake and when he's coming and when Jacoby's going. And I don't want him to look in the rearview mirror, but he's still competing each and every, like, stop talking. Stop talking and get ready for a game. You picked a starter, start the quarterback and play ball.
Yeah, that was a weird part of the answer when he's like, well, we don't want Jacoby to feel like there's he's sneaking up behind him. It's like, well, he is.
Well, he is.
That, we know he is. He drafted him third overall, and Brissett's been on a bunch of different teams and hasn't really been much of a starter in his life. Like, what are we talking about here? Like, obviously, that's what's going to be happening. And if it was, you know, if you're worried he's not going to be getting the reps or that these type of, it's going to be harder to evaluate him, which he asked and answered the follow-up question himself, which was also weird. But, like, if that's something that you're really worried about, it seems kind of weird that you're now talking about, well, I don't really want anybody to think that he's sneaking up on him. Well, everyone's reporting that you guys are expecting this guy is going to start at some point this year, and if that happens, then he will indeed be sneaking up on him. As far as all the technical stuff, decision-making, footwork, pocket presence, reading the defense, accuracy, throwing on the move, all that stuff, I like what I've seen from Drake May so far. I think most of us have. He hasn't made a lot of mistakes, and that's really, I think, what has a lot of people who are hoping that this would be a legit competition kind of bummed out about it. You know, like, well, if he was out there throwing a bunch of interceptions, if he was out there fumbling snaps, if he was out there throwing left and the guy cut right, you know, like things like that. We saw that with Mac when he was a rookie. Like, you saw that with Mac when he was a third year player too. But like, those are the types of things that I think people were maybe expecting to see on the negative side with Drake May this year. And we really haven't seen hardly any of that. We really haven't. Like, he's moved well in the pocket. His footwork looks like it's gotten better. His accuracy, I think, is fine. Guys have dropped passes. He reads the defense okay. I know it's not the real defense yet, and we may see things differently once he's going up against the ones, but so far, I don't really feel like Drake May's made a lot of mistakes that you can pick apart.
You can't. And, you know, it's funny because there's a lot of mixed messages / mixed feelings in this, and I go back to Dan Orlovsky, who recently tweeted, it might have been after the second preseason game, something to the effect that, like, reps are Drake May's friend right now. Reps, reps, reps. Well, he's not going to get a lot of reps, reps, reps moving forward unless he's the starter. That's just not how it works. And I know Jerod details that, you know, the show team, and that's great, and he'll get to pretend he's Joe Burrow out there and do some of those things, but the reality is he's not going to get a lot of developmental reps as the number two quarterback. The reps go 80-20, 90-10. I don't even know what the exact breakdown is, but significantly swayed toward the starting quarterback. And that's part of the problem. And that's part of, I also think, a layer of the decision, right, is,
yeah,
okay, he's not ready, but how do we get him ready? And is he so bad that we can't put him out there? Does that counteract the increase in reps that he'll get if he is our starter, the time where we can teach him? And not only did he not do a lot of the things you just enumerated, I continue to point to, as a quarterback apologist and Drake May apologist, he was a few helpful plays away from teammates from having a wow preseason, both on the practice field and on the preseason game field. So he wasn't that far away from probably and he was already sort of the talk. You know, the incompletion on the penalty. The completion that didn't count on the penalty that everybody oohed and aahed about.
Oh, the touchdown, yeah.
Yeah, the Baker throw, where Baker, and we'll get into him later, but Baker didn't make the catch. And, you know, there were days on the practice field where it was the same thing. He was, in my opinion, he was a hell of a lot closer to being the wow of the summer than he was of being the uh-oh of the summer. Like, I think it was really close to him probably making enough plays where the noise might have been so loud that they couldn't not start him. And I don't think what prevented him from that was him. It was teammates making some plays for him on the game and the practice field. So that's where I struggle with this. Like, to me, you're just wasting time. You're wasting reps. He's ready. He's ready to develop. And the developmental opportunities that will come with being a starter are more important to me than the developmental risks.
617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's take a call here before the break. Brian is in Pepperell with a thought on Bill Belichick and his drafting. Go ahead, Brian.
Hey, boys. How you doing?
What's up?
Big fan, guys. I was going to get your thoughts. I've really been calling in to get this thought. Bill Belichick, how much did he set back the Patriots guys in terms of drafting, and you can say free agency, on the offensive side of the ball? Insert Sean McVay laughing when Cole Strange is graded as a fourth-round pick. Rutgers guy, calling Herm Edwards, Nikhil Harry. I can go on and on and on. And I'm not joking when I say this. Is it the games passed him by? Is he invoking Steve Belichick from the 50s where you went up the middle? Or is he just indifferent to the offensive side of the ball? Can you kind of dig deep in terms of the psyche of Bill and whether it's indifference or not having the aptitude to identify players on the offensive side of the ball?
All right, thanks for the call, Brian. Appreciate it. You go back 10 years, and it is an ugly, ugly situation. It is. You know, you can make the argument that James White, in the last 10 years, might be one of your better, if not best, offensive selections. Like, that's not really an exaggeration. If you go back to 2014, there's not really a lot of other. Well, you know, there's Shaq Mason, there's Joe Tooney. If we're talking skill position players, though, I don't know that you beat James White in 2014.
Nope.
Is there someone that springs to mind immediately? There's not for me.
No. And I do think
he was a fourth-round pick.
Yeah, a mid-round pick. Which is less risk, less, you know, reward. I mean, more reward, less risk kind of thing as you get into the middle of the draft. But I do think, what did Brian say, aptitude? Like, I think he struggled to pick offensive players at times. And certainly, you know, out of the trenches. You know, Shaq Mason, Joe Tooney, those are good examples. And, you know, he's developed guys like David Andrews. And some of those, you don't know where Dante Scarnecchia played a role in bringing those guys in and developing them, picking them, those types of things. But there's no question that the misses in the draft are a big reason why this offense is so poor right now and so talentless, whether it's draft picks in the trenches, draft picks on the line. And I know we're getting further away from this, but it's all been a part of the process of you took Sony Michel over Chubb. You took Isaiah Wynn. Like, those are two first-round picks you blew. Then you
Nikhil
blew a
Harry.
Pick. Nikhil Harry. Then you blew a pick, or at least didn't maximize a pick on Cole Strange, because I know he's hurt now, but there's definitely some questions as to how good he is and how good a fit he is. You didn't exactly get, you know, a star offensive lineman who just happens to be injury riddled right now. You have a question mark at best. When you are missing first round picks, it sets you back. It's not as glaring as when, you know, you blow the third pick on the draft on Trey Lance or a quarterback, whatever. But year after year, if you consistently are not hitting your first round picks, it sets you back, and it alters just the whole landscape, because now you're playing catch up. You got to fill those voids. You got to spend free agency money, or you got to use another draft pick to try to make up for the loss the first time around, and the trickle down effect on everybody around them. So Yeah. Bill Belichick is a big reason this offense is so piss poor in terms of talent. Probably the he's the biggest reason. Not a big reason. He's the biggest reason.
Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And it's been like this for, you know, it wasn't just like the last two, three drafts. It's been going on like this for about 10 years. Or it had been going on. Like, he's not with the team anymore, but it had been going on like that for a long time. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll continue with your phone calls. I see some Patriots and some Red Sox calls lining up here. We'll get to as many as we can right after this. 617-779-7937 is your phone number. It's WEEI Afternoons. I'm Christian Arcand. That is Andy Hart. This is Boston Sports Original. Happy Labor Day, everybody. And let's get back to your phones. Robert is in Springfield with a thought on the Patriots' draft plans. Go ahead, Robert.
Yeah, I'm. How are you guys doing tonight?
What's
today,
up?
I'm sorry.
Good.
Yeah, I was just a quick question. I'm here. Do you think, obviously, the Patriots are going to suck this year. There's no ways around that. But next year's draft, you think they should just go get a lineman or get a top-five receiver? Just because our history of receivers is a little bit shaky. So I don't see how we can't sign them, apparently. So that's just a question I have for you guys. Thank you, guys.
Thank you for the call, Robert. Andy, you want to take this one?
So and it's funny because LSU-USC last night, they was on full display. Will Campbell, the left tackle for LSU, so I started watching him a little early.
It's a nice wide receiver play in that game, too.
Absolutely, and you're going to see that with a lot of college football teams. You saw that was that Thursday night when you were Buffaloes with Travis Hunter?
Sure did.
On the field.
My guy Jimmy Horn, too.
You got Jimmy Horn, the kid out of Arizona with 304 yards and four touchdowns. It's tantalizing. I personally think I would really, if I have faith in one of those linemen, I'd be leaning towards linemen because of a couple different reasons. Receivers are available later in the draft, and other teams find a way to find great receivers not in the top 10 picks in the draft. So you should be able to, too. And also, receivers are available in the league. It's a lot easier and I think fruitful to get a receiver in the NFL. We've talked about the names, the Diggses, the A.J. Browns of the world, than it is to get an elite left tackle. Those guys don't change teams very often. They often play the bulk of their career with one team, and then they kind of peter out at the end, and they might move. So I would be leaning towards, if there's a tackle worth a top 10 pick, a blue chip tackle, I would personally take the tackle.
All right, that's fair. I think I'd go the other way, and not just to be a contrarian, but because I don't need an elite left tackle. Like, it'd be nice to have one, I guess, but I need a serviceable left tackle. I need someone who can go out there and be good enough, you know? Like, that's sort of what I'm looking for at the tackle position. I don't need, you know, one of the all-time greats. I don't need Jonathan Ogden out there. Like, that would be a nice thing if you happen to hit on that guy, but if you bring in someone who's good enough for enough years, I think that can work out for you, too.
Where are you getting him?
That could be later on in the draft. That could be, through a trade. That could be through free agency or some other way. I know it's not easy to do that, but I just think that the bar for me is a little bit lower than what I'm looking for in a wide receiver for someone like Drake May. I don't want just a serviceable wide receiver for Drake May. I want a playmaker. I want an elite talent at that position that you know will be able to coexist, with Drake May and his career going forward. I'm not looking for that same level of elite play from my left tackle. Like, it'd be nice to have. I think that'd be a nice luxury. But really, I think for this day and age in the NFL now, I'm looking more for that big playmaker than I am for an elite left tackle when I feel like you can get a lot of the same return on your investment when the left tackle's good, not great, and you barely even notice the difference half the time. Like, you notice the difference in the wide receivers if you have a bad one or a good one. In left tackle, if you have a good one or a great one, sometimes that line gets a little more blurry, I guess.
But usually the good one comes in the first round. That's the
usually, yeah, you're right.
You know,
I mean,
Christian
Darrisaw, but
Rashawn Slater. I'm just trying to think of guys. Most of the tackles, if you have even a good one, I'm not saying a great one, a good to really good one, he was a first round pick. He may not have been in the top 10, may have gone in the teens, early 20s, but generally speaking, if you get a really good tackle, he's going in the first round. The flip side of that is, and I know no one around here trusts this, I understand it fully, because we've lived the life that is a Patriots fan.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of teams that find Deebo Samuels in the second round, right? The A.J. Browns, D.K. Metcalfs. Like,
sure.
There's a lot. Puka Nacua in the fifth round is obviously a bit of a stretch, but you should be able to find an elite. A.D. Mitchell, I think, for the Colts, could end up being a star. They're, like, every year.
Could have had him.
Yeah, no kidding. But yeah. Every year, and maybe Jalen Polk is that guy for the Patriots. I don't want to be Mr. Negativity. You know, PFF, PFF thinks that Jalen Polk is like a star receiver in the making and the Patriots are all set. Maybe they're right. Maybe we're wrong right now. Maybe there isn't a need for a receiver because Baker and Polk are the future. And then it makes it easy. Go get the tackle, right? If you've solved anything at receiver, it means you really have one massive need, and that's go get a tackle.
Yeah, I mean, you're right about that, and I think right now that's a more dire need than they have at wide receiver. But if we're talking about what to go after in the first round or in the lottery, if that's indeed where this team is picking, which I think we all agree is probably where they're going to be, that's where I would lean. 617-779-7937, there's your phone number. Let's get back to the phones here and talk to Mike in Framingham. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you for taking my call. I want to quickly say what I think you guys want to say but have been reluctant to say. Two things. Wolf should have been fired weeks ago for his poor strategy on drafting and what he refused to do with all the money they had available. And the second thing is Mayo is so far over his head, it's crazy.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mike. I think firing Wolf is maybe a little further out there than what we've been saying or wanted to say, but I don't think either of us have shied away from saying that Mayo may be in over his head here. I think we both said those exact words.
Yeah, and that also doesn't mean he won't swim to the surface and then spring out the water, right? Like he has been scuffling in the first, but can you imagine if they fired Mayo and Elliot Wolf 6 months into their tenure? Hell, Elliot Wolf just got the title. He got the promotion within...
After the draft, yeah.
Yeah, like a couple months ago. I don't think Elliot Wolf should have been fired. Has there been ways he could have done things differently? Sure. Do I think he should have gotten a left tackle? Absolutely. That's the one I'm dead set on. Not a projected left tackle. He should have gotten a left tackle. I don't care what round. I don't care what level. He should have gotten a left tackle. That was Elliot Wolf's biggest mistake. And then there's others. You know, you don't want to say he could have got Brandon Ayuk or he could have got Calvin Ridley. Other things. To me, the real damning aspect of his first offseason was not getting a true left tackle. He drafted Drake May. I like Drake May. I think Drake May's the future. So I'm on board with that, and I think that's where his career will either take off or fizzle out, is whatever Drake May does. And Jerod Mayo is learning on the fly, but I continue to always point back to Cleveland, where Bill Belichick was a debacle early in his tenure there, and then he went on to be the greatest coach in the eyes of most of you people.
He certainly did. All right, let's take one more call here before the top of the hour. Steve's in the car with a thought on Alex Cora. Go ahead, Steve.
Hey, how you guys doing?
What's up, Steve?
Hey.
Well, you know, Cora, I miss Francona, I'll be honest with you. Cora doesn't know when to take a pitcher out and when to leave him in. He's been doing it for years, and he just got bailed out the other night by the offense when he was up 4-0, left the pitcher in, got 3 runs, then put in his top reliever. They tied it, and we came back and won it by luck. Well, by talent from the offense.
There was some talent involved too there, Steve. Yeah. Yes, I agree with you. Cora did luck out. He had a brutal, brutal weekend. Leaving Bernardino in, I agree, was unforgivable. They managed to come back and win. They probably should have gotten swept this weekend. Absolutely brutal weekend managing for Alex Cora. And, of course, the debacle with Cooper Criswell yesterday. We'll get into all of that. We'll do a heavy Red Sox this next hour. So if you have anything to say about Cora and the way that this weekend with the Detroit Tigers went, load them up right now. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. We'll be right back.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr Sides and Bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly! Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Or trap pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.